You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Brian Walsh, a trial that is so unsettling. It isn't just the allegations themselves. It's the chasm between the two stories that are playing out in court. Prosecutors are laying down a timeline so exact it feels like watching a map populate in real time. The pre-dawn Google searches about body disposal, the store runs for cutting tools and chemicals, the phone data and the tracing every mile, the DNA recovered from a trash compactor hours away from home. And then there's the defense version, a version where all of that exists but somehow means something entirely different. A version built on the claim that Anna suddenly died with no warning, and Brian, overwhelmed and terrified, responded not with a cry for help, with a series of actions that mirror deliberate concealment. Two competing stories, one of them grounded in data, timestamps, and physical evidence, the other grounded in emotional possibility and the idea that panic can look indistinguishable from planning. So the question isn't just which story is true, it's which story the jury can live with. And that's why I want to bring in someone who understands not just the law, but the psychology of the juries, the anatomy of the defense strategy, and how narratives look like this, and how this can rise or collapse under scrutiny. Defense attorney and host of Defense Diaries, Bob Mata, is with us, and there's a lot to get into here today. But before we get into the evidence, Bob, does this feel like a defense theory chosen strategically or one chosen because there was literally no other path available?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say the latter. I think it was a situation, and I was just talking about it on our stream, and I apologize for being late. I had to kind of dip over here from there. I think that ultimately when you have a client that is confronted with the evidence that they have, okay, and he was confronted with it early on in terms of them saying, hey, look, we found all these searches on this iPad mini, and they're a problem. Can you explain them? And at that point, he starts lying. Oh, I don't know where those came from. Was it my six-year-old? I didn't do it. Right. Like that whole thing that goes on early on in that investigation, he's pigeonholed himself into lying about that. So when Tipton, his public defender, gets this case and it's going through everything, and if his client is telling him, look, man, like, I get it. I did do those searches, but this is why. And it's not because I killed my wife. It's because I went down to clean the kitchen. When I came back up, mysteriously, she had died. I freaked out. I didn't know what to do. I thought that they would pin it on me because they always pin it on the husband. And mistakenly, or whatever the case may be, I decided that the best course of action would be to dispose of her body and take it from there, you know? And so when Tipton is, you know, got that set of facts in front of him, and he's got a client who's adamantly telling him that he didn't kill his wife, he's basically got no other option. Like, I don't know what else the guy could do, you know, even if in his own mind, his attorney's like, okay, well, this guy's completely full of shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's not the way defense work works. You don't get to do that. You know, you have to do the job. Got a client professing his innocence, at least as to the murder itself. But he's owning up to the fact that he did dismember the body and dispose of it. So it's a wacky defense. I was dying to know coming in light of the fact that he had pled out to the two other charges, which was the lying to the cops and the disposal of the body. I was very curious to see what they were going to do with it. So during openings, we found out, and this is what they're going to do. It's their story and they're sticking to it, D.
I have a question. Do you mind if I jump in for just a second?
Yep.
So Bob, what's it like as a defense attorney sitting there across the table from somebody and you're looking at them going, like you said, you are just full of shit. You still have a job to do. What's it like representing somebody like that? Have you had to do that a few times?
Oh, yeah. I mean, defense attorneys have to do it all the time. You know, I mean, there's the concept of, you know, you can't know what happened because none of us were there. The cops weren't there. Prosecutor wasn't there. We certainly weren't there when the crime took place. You know, from our perspective, we have to take whatever our client is saying to us at face value. Obviously, we're going to have our own opinions, which typically, you know, moving towards trial, when you're going through the evidence with your client, you're saying, look, this is super problematic, buddy. You know, I know that you're telling me that you didn't do this, but they have a lot of really powerful evidence against you. You know, do you want me to talk to the state about potentially coming up with a plea agreement on this case? And it doesn't even have to be a murder case. It could be anything, you know, take it out of the realm of the most extreme cases and just put it in the realm of a more mundane case, like a theft case, or, you know, like a drug possession case or anything of that nature. And, you know, you're always going to look at the evidence. You're always going to go to your client and say, this is what they've got. And, you know, it's problematic. Or, you know, I think that we have a defense here that supports your position. Either way, you know, as a defense attorney, kind of where this thing's going to end up at trial. You know, you have, if you're an experienced trial attorney and they've got powerful evidence, you know, you're telling your client, look, man, I get that you're saying that you're innocent, but if we go to trial on this thing, there's no magic that's going to happen at trial. There's no silver tongued-ness that's going to happen at trial that's going to allow us to win this case. You're going to get convicted. So based on what I'm telling you, you know, you make your decision on what you want to do here. You want to go forward with the trial, or do you want me to try to get a plea agreement that, you know, where the punishment fits the crime. And then I kind of operate from that position. You know, sometimes you'll have clients that are adamant about going to trial, that they don't give a shit how much, powerful evidence the state has, and then you're stuck and you go in and your job in that situation is to make sure that your client's getting a fair trial. Okay. And make sure that the prosecutor's doing their job correctly. Make sure that the cops did their job correctly. And then once you do all those things and you allow the facts to play themselves out, you know, as a defense attorney, that the right result is probably going to happen for the most part, like in a vast majority of situations. So, you know, I mean, you have your job as a defense attorney, you know, and you're going to do it. And, you know, and if you're stuck in a situation like Tipton is, who again is his public defender, wherein you're stuck with these facts and you've got a client that's just not admitting that he did what the state's saying that he did, then, you know, you put it out there and you let the jury do its job and you let the state do their job.
Is that difficult when you have kind of a split the difference strategy going on here? Because I'm wondering if that's what initially happened here, if it was like, look, let's try and work on some sort of a plea deal here, which they came to where he came out and said, you know, I'm guilty on the first two charges, but not on the others. Do you think that that was a difficult conversation behind closed doors where Tipton was like, okay, well, you're going to say this. It feels like he made it even harder to argue the case by admitting the first two pieces of this, the lying to the cops and the disposing of the body. And then now we're going to go try and argue that you didn't kill your wife, even though you did these two. It's a weird strategy, and I'm wondering if it's one that was more so employed by Tipton saying, let's do this, or more so Brian Walsh and what we know about him and his ever narcissistic wisdom saying, no, this is going to be good. This is going to work good. And by the way, do you want to buy a Warhol?
Right.
Yeah, no, I think that ultimately it's born out of the fact that his client is not confessing to him that he committed the homicide. Yeah. 'Cause in this particular type of defense, T, you know, the question immediately becomes is Brian Walsh going to have to testify? And I think that he's going to have to. Mm-hmm. I just think that he's going to have to testify. And so, you know, from a defense attorney's perspective, we are not allowed to suborn perjury, meaning that Brian Walsh couldn't have said, I did this. We got to figure out a way out of it. So Tipton's not going to be able to come into court and put his client on the stand and suborn perjury. When if Walsh has said, I've done the crimes, all of them, but you know, your job is to get me off. That's not how this shit works.
No,
it's just not how it works. So what I think happened is that ultimately Tipton went to him with what he already knew, because he had already been grilled on this shit. They had already charged him with lying. They knew that he was lying. They knew that he had done the searches. There was no other reasonable explanation other than unless he's going to try to throw his own mother under the bus, and that it was her that had done all the searches and the crime, that, you know, there's no other explanation that's going to lead to anyone else other than Brian Walsh having been the culprit of this crime. So he's got all that. And then I think we'll figure out based on when these experts were retained, in terms of which I'm sure we're going to get into, which is their defense, this sudden unexpected death syndrome.
Yeah.
We'll know at what point Tipton kind of said, all right, this is the way we're going to go in terms of our theory of defense. It's the only thing that we've got. And we'll know at what point in time that happened, whether it was preceding trial by months, whether it was way back when, because there wasn't a plea. There was not a plea agreement in terms of him changing his plea. Like, I don't think the state offered him shit. That wasn't the state saying, okay, we're going to allow you to plead out to these two things to muddy up our case. I think what he just decided to do is, look, you're going to have to just plead guilty to these things. You're going to have to change your plea. You have to step in front of the judge and say, I know that I initially pled not guilty to those two charges, but I've changed my mind. I'm going to own it. I did do those things. And so that's what happened there. So, yeah, man, I just think ultimately Tipton's playing the hand that he was dealt, and you know, and he's stuck with a client who's just not making the admission that he killed her.
Yeah.
It's almost like the Alec Murdaugh strategy in a way, where right at the very last minute, okay, I admit it, I lied. I lied. And then it goes into his whole tale of here's what really happened. And oh, what right. a tangled web we weave.
Right.
Yeah. Quite tangled, without
Indeed.
A doubt.
We
got the Google searches, and these are some of the most damning digital pieces of evidence I think that we've seen. When I talk about digital footprints, this is usually the case I go to give examples of just how damning these sort of things can be. As a defense attorney, where do you even start when the timestamps and these searches line up so cleanly and look so damn incriminating? I don't know how they are going to try and paint this thing as anything other than what it really appears to be, murder and covering up a body, especially with some of the searches done prior to her death as well.
Yeah. It's the Google searches are incredibly damning. The question is, in terms of the timing of it, they're all very damning, but they actually kind of do fit into this fakakta story that they've come up with.
Right.
That she, you know what I'm saying? Like, the only Google search that really takes place prior to, you know, that New Year's Eve timeline in terms of, you know, the first substantive search that takes place is at like 4:54 a.m. where he does the first search that you're like, holy shit, mm-hmm. is the 12:27 thing where he says, you know, what's the best state to get a, you know, divorce to yeah. a man. Mm-hmm. So like, that's the only kind of smoking gun Google search that takes place prior to. So there's mm-hmm. nothing that exists prior to the New Year's Eve date wherein he's Googling things like we end up seeing after the fact. So that kind of actually, which I think, again, from Tipton's perspective, he's like, all right, well, this guy is saying that he didn't do it, and this is what he's telling me happened. And the evidence that we have kind of supports it. So, you know, whether or not a jury's ever going to buy it is a whole different thing. But in terms of it being implausible, it's not. Because of the timing of the searches. Now, to me, the biggest factor that I think is kind of wanting from the state's evidence is the fact that we know that there's a Google search wherein he is searching how to get blood out of the wood. Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Which tells us that she wasn't killed in the basement mm-hmm. because we've seen the floor of the basement, it's concrete. And the one thing that at least we haven't, I'm not aware that it exists, and they're very early on in the state's case in chief, it may exist, and maybe it just hasn't come out in the pretrial motions. Did they find evidence of either cleaning materials being used upstairs where the crime might have been committed? Because if they have one piece of evidence that would indicate that she was killed, not dying suddenly of some unexpected medical thing coming up, then their theory shot to shit, because then you know that she was killed upstairs and she had to have been killed some way, unless, of course, he strangled her and there's no blood, or he put a pillow over her head and killed
her. But there's no body. So how do you?
Exactly. So that's the problem for the state in the case. You know, ultimately, they're not going to be able to show what the cause of death is. You know, they're not going to be able to do that because they just haven't been able to find her remains. So it's a really, like, at the end of the day, do I think that a jury's ever going to buy it? No. But in terms of kind of the puzzle pieces being put together, there are gaping holes for the state wherein, again, when you're thinking about the theory of defense and did Tipton have any other way to go with it? Not really, but he took advantage of the fact that they're not going to be able to prove how she was killed.
At some point, do you think it probably just depends how much of a corner they get pushed into here? Are we going to hear the details of, okay, she was dead, and then I decided that the best way is to dispose of her, and the best way would be to to cut her up, apparently. And I decided to do it in the bedroom, and that was a bad idea. So then I moved her to the basement. Like, could they try and explain things away that way, where it's like, yeah, we did get some of the blood on the wood, but that's not from me murdering her. It's from me chopping her up. That's all it is, everybody. When you just start chopping up your wife after she dies of sudden adult death syndrome or whatever the hell they're trying to say this is. I mean, it's kind of chameleoning the whole storyline around whatever it needs to fit, no matter how crazy it is, as long as you can say it with a straight face, maybe somebody will believe this.
Yeah, all it takes is one for a mistrial, you know. And when I was watching the openings, T and Stace, the one thing that I kind of gleaned from it is I will not be shocked at all. Because we know one of the things that they found when they found, you know, these various bags of garbage that he was dumping all over the cities, right? When he's driving around. On his very busy days, as they find her COVID vaccination card. I immediately thought that I'm not going to be shocked, because we know that there's a large segment of society. I don't know if it's large or not, but there's a segment of society that believes that the vaccination has been linked to causing kind of sudden deaths of people, mm-hmm. unexplained. I will not be at all surprised. As a matter of fact, I think that they might lean into it, that they're going to put it on the vaccination as being the source of what killed Anna suddenly and unexplainably. Don't be shocked if that happens. If one of these doctors says that, you know, puts that out there as a distinct possibility of what might have happened here.
But
to
again,
Anna Walsh,
doesn't that say a lot about a spouse? You know, no matter the state of your relationship, if something happens to you, your first instinct is to go, well, I need to cut this body up instead of calling. I mean, like, fucking this is insane. The mother of my children, but I'm going to dismember her and get rid of her, because that's cheaper than a funeral these days.
It's insane is what it is. It's insane to think, because here's the competing issues with, if it's him thinking, okay, I'm panicking because they're going to think, because I'm the husband, that I did something to her because she was having an affair, which I became aware of. So they're going to think that I'm the guy. So I've got to make it look like she's just vanished. Okay. Because they're going to pin this shit on me. The problem is that he has to know. I mean, this guy's not a total moron. He's a fucking con man. The guy's trying to sell fake Warhols to people and was convicted of it in federal court, not through a trial, but he pled guilty to doing it. So, I mean, the guy's not a total moron. He has to know. Even if he thinks he's being slick and using his six-year-old's iPad mini to conduct the searches, that law enforcement is going to look at all the devices, that eventually they're going to find these searches. He had to know. So this concept that, okay, they're going to pin it on me because I'm the husband and I found out about this affair that she's having, in comparison to, they're going to find all these fucking bizarre search terms that I've put into my son's iPad mini. Which one's worse? They're always going to think that the second one's worse. They're going to think that you killed your wife once they find those Google searches. So it's like there was never a way this was going to work out to where they weren't thinking that he was the guy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like there's just, I cannot work a way in my mind to where he didn't think that. And if he didn't, then he is a bigger moron that I give him credit for, you know, I mean, which is possible.
I think there's a lot of that at play here, of the bigger moron than we give him credit for. We're talking with Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries, about the Brian Walsh case, the murder of his wife, Anna Walsh. He's obviously accused of that. He's now admitted to lying to investigators and concealing the body, but not the murder. That is a bridge too far. Never mind all these Google searches about disposing of bodies, cutting them up, going to Home Depot, buying hacksaws, cleaning materials, all of these things. None of that. Yes, that happened, but the reasoning, the motive is this. It's not possibly that. And intelligence is a big thing here. And we obviously we see a bit of his track record with trying to sell the fake Warhols. This guy is a con man. This seems to be his you know modality in life is conning people. So you got that as the backdrop of all of this. And that was even brought up into court the other day in opening, I believe, where they did mention about the Warhols. So that's in there. The jury does know about his con man past. Add that to the mix. This is not painting a very strong picture of a man who just simply panicked. I mean, panic is emotional. Panic is messy. Panic is reactive. But the conduct here, the multiple stores, the different towns, the cash purchases, masks, it looks organized. Let me ask you on that, and this is just conjecture on how you're looking at this. Do you think he planned the death of his wife, the unaliving, the murder, if in fact it is murder? Or do you think this was very much something happened? Maybe it was accidental. Maybe it was heat of the moment and anger. But something happened at his hands, and this is just how stupid the guy is, that he didn't think any of this through and literally just made it 10 times worse than it needed to be because it was kind of a, oh, shit, I really wasn't planning on killing her today. I wonder if he was ever really planning on killing her or if this just heat of the moment and now they're dealing with the aftermath.
Yeah, it's hard to know in terms of – the evidence that exists does not suggest that it was premeditated beyond, you know, the time frame that we are aware of, right?
Unhappy, but not necessarily evidence of a murder.
Right. Well, I mean, and the defense's opening was really of kind of the mindset that, look, this was a happily married couple. Now, we know, obviously, Anna's deep, deep into an affair, okay, with another guy. That she's traveling and meeting. Like, I mean, she's deep, deep into this thing. So the defense is trying to say that he was unaware of that, that from his perspective, that they were in a happy marriage, that he couldn't live without her, you know, that there's nothing that exists that shows that they were not happy, at least from Brian's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That he was under the impression that she loved him. He loved her. They're putting up like text messages that he brings up during opening, like, you know, how do all these text messages where they're talking about the kids and just general things like, I love you back, you know, that for like on the surface, it appears that they're a loving couple. So you have to think from that perspective, they're not going to be able to show premeditation.
Mm-hmm.
If they are, again, it's something that we're not aware of. So, but they don't really care at this point, you know, like, the murder is the murder is the murder. And again, premeditation, as we've talked about during other cases, can be formed in 30 seconds. It doesn't have to be weeks or days or hours prior to. It can happen almost immediately. Or as you said, they get in a fucking giant argument in the heat of the moment. And he chokes her out and he's like, oh, my God, what did I do? You know, and then he goes about doing all the nasty business that he does after the fact. You know, I think that the reality, and you had put, I think it was Gen Z's comment up, and it's exactly right. Like if your loved one, somebody that you love deeply, who's your soulmate, you come back to the bedroom and you find that person not breathing. Okay. The only reasonable thing that to do is to call fucking 911.
Yep.
And say, my wife isn't breathing. Please come help. Like nobody on that jury is going to believe for one fucking second that this guy came back from cleaning the kitchen from a 3-person party, finds his wife not breathing, and then decides that the best course of action is not to call 911 to try to help revive her, but instead, well, Jesus, how am I going to get rid of her body? Like, no,
and
no
I need to clean this up. Yeah, I need to go to Home Depot and get cleaning supplies because clearly we're out. You know, well, I need to get
exactly.
And then add into the mix, you got kids. Yes. This isn't just like some fling or something. You don't barely know each other. There's not emotional attachment. There is. There's years of marriage. There's children. There's a family. And the idea that I'm so fearful they're going to go after me for her death that I'm going to completely just make her disappear into the ether and the kids will never know what happened, but I'll know what happened. Like, this is all okay. This is normal. This is something that he's going to be able to live with. I don't know. I mean, maybe he probably could have been able to live with it. He seems to have a very interesting way of thinking in the way that he handles dealing with other folks out there in the world. Lying doesn't seem to be that big of a hurdle for him. But to think that this is going to be the strategy, I mean, I think the craziness of it is to think that he thought that at that moment, even. I'm going to guess this idea of claiming, oh, she just died, you know, miraculously, sudden unexplained death. I'm going to guess that didn't enter the equation till further down the line. I don't know that it was going through his mind right away when he found her dead. And I put that in air quotes.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing, though. Here's what makes this case, like, interesting. And again, we don't know all the evidence that the state has. Yeah. But we know who does know all of the evidence that the state has is Tipton, his lawyer. Yeah. So, again, hearkening back to the concept, I'm assuming that they do not have any evidence of her being killed upstairs. Number one, because they don't have the body. And number two, because forensically, they didn't find anything that would show that this took place upstairs. And again, you know, I mean, I guess they could try to tell that story that you said, oh, you know, I was going to chop her up upstairs and then realize midway as soon as I took her arm off, that this is a bad idea. I should go do this in the fucking basement or the bathtub, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I guess they could say that, but I'm going to assume that they don't have that type of evidence in terms of him doing something upstairs. They didn't find any blood spatter anywhere. They didn't find it on the walls. They didn't find a speck anywhere, meaning that, you know, either a you know, blunt force trauma may not have happened where he struck her in the head violently, or he used a knife or the hatchet, whatever. You know, that there's nothing, shot her. There's no evidence of that taking place upstairs, which would lead you to believe that that he would have killed her probably by asphyxiation or, again, smothering her with a pillow, something of that nature, right? Mm-hmm. So that there was no blood left up there. The other part of it that's interesting, though, is that you have that lack of evidence from the state's perspective in terms of how she died. Mm-hmm. But what you also might be missing, which, again, we don't know if it exists. I have no idea if it exists, is this guy is on house arrest, okay? He's not able to tail her, okay? Mm-hmm. So even if he suspects she's having an affair, he's not able to follow her around and solidify it. We don't have any evidence that he hired a PI to follow her around. So the question then becomes, since they've gone through all the devices, typically, you're going to find some text messages between husband and wife wherein he's saying, I can't fucking believe you did this to me. I know you're cheating on me a bit. Like, is there going to be evidence that he was aware of the affair?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because they're sitting there saying in opening, and I'm talking about the defense, he's not aware of it. And again, Tipton knows all the evidence. So, mm-hmm. like, that's another kind of fact that exists, or lack of a fact that exists, that kind of plays into the defense's theory that, again, you're going to have to not be able to use that motive of he knew of the affair because they couldn't prove it. They could not prove that he was aware that she was having the affair. So you're going to have to, and this is what Tipton would argue in terms of closing argument. Forget that. They didn't prove that. They cannot prove that my client knew that his wife was having an affair. So that's not the motive. Now, what are they going to lean into next? Are they going to lean into the life insurance policy? Because he needed to pay this $425,000 in restitution on the federal case. He needed the money. Is that why he did it? And they're going to be able to say, okay, well, they have no evidence that he was going into her accounts, that he knew that she had this kind of money, that she had $117,000 in her own private equity fund. you know, mm-hmm. that, you know, so there are challenges for the state in this thing where, again, if you get one juror that's like, okay, I'm hearing what these doctors are saying. You've got three or four doctors that are up here testifying that this is something that does happen, as rare and unusual as it may be, but people do die suddenly without explanation. And everything that they found in terms of Google searches really does only relate to him dismembering the body.
Yeah.
Maybe it's possible that she was. He was just a fucking idiot in the moment. He did the wrong thing. You know, we can't sit here and judge how people react to trauma. You know, I mean, like, it's a super bizarre story, man. But
what I'm most interested in hearing, I think, in this, that's, I think, going to tell us a lot, and seeing is going to be the digital footprint between Brian and his mom. And his mom and this private investigator that she allegedly hired, and the private investigator in general, because that, I think, is going to answer the question as to how much he knew or suspected about an affair going on. And then also his thinking, the way he was feeling about it. If your mom is getting involved and you're 40 some years old, and right. mom is the one that's hiring the PI to trail your wife and this sort of stuff, that's an unhealthy relationship.
It has, like, a little Adelson feel to it, doesn't it?
A little weird. It feels like Adelson-y. Like Brian. Yeah. Adelson-y. Like Brian might've been told a few too many times that, oh, you get a gold star too. You get a blue ribbon no matter what. And I think he may have taken that into heart into an adult life. That, I think, is going to be very telling in terms of his mindset, and maybe even more revealing than just his mindset, his own words about how he's feeling about his wife. And if there are any of those utterances, and maybe not even in the moment of, you know, I hate her, I want her dead, but just those things that people say in anger and frustration, what that is going to reveal about the mindset, because the PI was hired just before the murder took place, or the death took place, or however this happened took place. That is going to be very telling.
Yeah, 100%. And that goes back to what I was just saying. And Gen Z keeps talking about it in chat. The reality of the situation is he would be bombarding her with texts. There would be evidence. Now, the problem is with text messages is that if they got them through subpoena through the carrier, the phone carrier, they only keep the content of the text messages for so long, mm-hmm. right? But this would seem to be within that time frame in terms of when she disappears, and by the time law enforcement is like, okay, we're subpoenaing shit, theoretically they would have those if those texts are going back and forth. Now, in terms of the mom hiring the PI, I was not aware of that. Is that like a thing that actually happened?
Yeah. That's.
Where do we know that from?
According to the prosecution filings in late December of 2022, just days before she vanished, Brian's mother, with what prosecutors say was his input and discretion, hired a PI to surveil Anna in Washington, D.C., where she worked. That's from the Boston Globe. The stated purpose was to investigate infidelity, according to ABC News, and the private investigator contract and subsequent PI testimony. They're going to be part of the evidence that prosecutors are planning to bring on here. So that PI hire, the suspicion of the affair is going to go to that motive of he did suspect allegedly that there was an affair going on, and to what depth. I think that's going to be very telling, and what the PI is going to be able to say is going to be very telling.
When was it? Yeah. See, I'm coming into this trial, watching this trial right from the get, sure. like without having, like, I'm watching the trial to see what evidence they have.
Yeah.
So forget all the other shit. I mean, theoretically, I assume the state is going to put the PI on to testify. So they're not going to have to rely on records. They're going to talk directly to the PI. The PI doesn't have some kind of privilege mm-hmm. with anybody. The PI is going to have to come on and say, okay, well, this is what I discovered, and this is what I relayed to the family. This is what I relayed to, you know, Brian's mother and Brian.
You know, and we don't even know how far the PI even got either, because it was hired right before this took place. So it might have just been, hey, we hired, here's what mom said, or you know, and here's what we're doing, here's our agreement. But that's gonna be really telling.
Let's flesh that out again, because remember, like, I watched some of the pretrial stuff, but it was more recent. It was like from the motion in limine's on. So if And again, you know who knows all the evidence is Tipton, his attorney. So he is sitting there during opening statement saying that Brian didn't have knowledge, which would lead me to believe if he was aware that the PI had given photographs, say, for instance, of Anna in a you know compromising position with her lover that he has taken from outside, wherever they're staying, or walking into a hotel together hand in hand, or sitting in the bar of the hotel snuggling.
Or was it just suspicion at that moment? Because again, I don't know how far the PI even got other than being hired. So it may have just been, and that may be, Tipton's statement may be completely accurate of he didn't know that there was an affair. There may have been suspicion, but he didn't have the hard evidence. Because I don't think he ever did get that far with any sort of hard evidence with the PI. But certainly the suspicion seemed to be there, and this would certainly back up that suspicion. Or was it more suspicion on the part of mom? If mom's the one who's hiring the PI, what sort of involvement did Brian have? That could be very beneficial to Brian in a way. Mm-hmm. If you get a text string or something going back between mom and son, mom going, I think she's having an affair, I'm going to look into this for you. And he's saying, nah, that doesn't need to happen. That could be there too. And that could actually work in favor of Brian, depending on what it all reveals to be.
Yeah. And I mean, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of potential motive, it's there. If they don't have evidence that Brian knew, then which again, now that you're mentioning that this PI exists, I mean, if he takes the stand, you know, that is going to be, you know, even as Tipton might be very careful in terms of what he'll get into on direct, the judge is going to allow the state to question him as to whether or not he had knowledge that his mother hired this PI, whether or not he was reporting back to just his mother or to Walsh. They're going to be able to get into that kind of stuff. Because that motive, more than anything, is incredibly powerful. So, you know, and if they have any way that they're going to be able to prove it, you know, the judge is going to allow that kind of questioning if he takes a stand. And if Tipton knows that shit's out there, that plays against that concept of you putting your guy on the stand, you know, and in this situation, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't type situation, because you have to kind of put him on the stand in order for him to explain what his thought process was in terms of when he decided to do what he did, ultimately, in terms of disposing of her body the way that he did.
Yeah,
it's crazy. It's crazy. So, yeah, it's a pretty interesting trial. It really is.
I think Gen Z just had made a comment there that I saw that I agree with, because I was thinking of this too. It says, I also think that the motive isn't the extramarital affair. The wife knew he had the art fraud and maybe he was worried she was going to expose him. And that's what this reads to me too. This doesn't necessarily read to me of anger of you're cheating on me. I just, for whatever reason, that doesn't seem to strike me on this one. I think it's more so fear that she's going to expose him for not just the art fraud, but every God knows what else.
Whatever else is hiding under the
this guy's story, because she holds all the cards. Wait, but expose him
to who?
To anything else that he could be exposed.
He'd already fled out.
Yes, but I'm wondering if there's more stuff. I'm wondering if it's one of those things where if they got into some sort of messy divorce proceeding and there was questions about custody of the kids.
Oh, so you're Murdoching the fuck out of this case.
Kind of. I mean, I guess I am. I guess I think I think he was sitting there. This is my conjecture. I think he thought, I have so much to lose if she leaves me. Not only like his only financial support, the kids, everything, but also the one person who did stand by him for God knows why, for how long. Mm-hmm. What else does she know? What other skeletons are in the closet that could come out in those other areas that he was not willing to be exposed on? Because we all know the last thing and the worst damn thing in the world to a narcissist is exposure.
Bingo.
And that's the card she held.
Well, like putting aside the narcissistic aspect of it, just the potential criminal liability if he was up to more.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And if he was doing other
exposure.
Shit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That thing, and that is definitely a Murdoch thing. Like that. Yeah. That is kind of the concept that was behind the state's theory in that case. That, you know, his wife knew way more than she was supposed to know, and she was a potential problem for him.
She's a liability.
You know, and that was a thing wherein he could have said, all right, you know, as much as this pains me. But I've always been of the mindset that I don't think Murdoch did it himself. I think that he hired a couple of bonehead meth heads from the area to do the damn thing. I think he was in the property. I think he said, use my weapons. I'll get rid of them because I don't trust you guys because you're fucking crackheads.
Yeah.
And, you know, you do it because I can't bring myself to do it. You know, because I mean, in Murdoch, when you kind of look at the family history, I think there's no question that he actually did love his wife and kid.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You know, like I think so. So for me, you know, and people were like, oh, that's fucking crazy. I'm like, no, it's not. It's not.
No, he loved his wife and kid, but he loved himself more.
Yeah, well, and he had a lot to hide.
Yeah.
You know, he had a lot to hide at that point.
And that's where I think this may be similar in some ways to that, where do I think he probably loved his wife and kid in a way that narcissists love? I don't think it's the type of love we think of, but there's something there. But at the end of the day, they love themselves more. And if whoever that is out there, no matter how close, no matter how much they love that person, if that person becomes a threat and they see it very much as that ship is going down and this is the only life vest I have, they're going to do whatever they need to do. And that's what I think might have been going on here. I want to talk more about the medical phenomena that they're going to try and pitch here with the defense, trying to rely on this extremely rare medical phenomena. No. I know we hinted maybe they're going to try and go down the COVID route. I mean, how careful do they have to be to not overplay that hand and look like they're teaching jurors exotic trivia instead of presenting a real case?
I mean, I think they're going to have to put it out there. I had never heard of it.
Yeah.
To be honest, I had never heard of
it. It seemed like it's kind of pulled out of thin air, quite honestly.
Right. I mean, I'm going to be learning along with the jury of this thing that I didn't know existed. I mean, do I, of course, know that people like kind of die suddenly?
Sure.
But yeah, typically it's like the guy had a grabber, you know,
there's and he an was underlying like, something
you, right. Yeah. Like, yeah. You know, and for all intents and purposes, the guy, you know, jogged 8 miles a day, he fucking ate like a champion. And like, there was like, nobody was predicting this. We had no idea that he was going to have a heart attack because he seemed like a completely fit and healthy guy.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't something that we ever thought was a possibility. So, I mean, I've obviously heard of that kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm telling you, man, like, do not at all be shocked if they lean into this thing that it was related to the COVID vaccine. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Like I came up with that, like, as I was listening, it popped into my head and I'm like, are they going to go there? Are they going to fucking try to go there with this thing? And, you know, if you get one dude on the jury that's like, yeah, the vaccinations are that thing. I mean, it could be a fucking thing where it actually works on one juror. I don't know, man. I don't know. But yeah, it's like there are fascinating aspects to this fucking case that just like have me sucked into it. You know, like have me wanting to watch it to see how it all plays out, because it's like we're sitting here from the outside looking in and we're all like, this shit is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
You know, like this whole story is so whacked out that there's no way it's going to work. But if things are placed in a way that they're just right and you've got some witnesses that are experts that are going to get on the stand and teach people. I mean, you like, that's the point of an expert witness, is that they're they're telling the jurors something that they don't know, and they're teaching them about something that they wouldn't know otherwise. You know, mm-hmm. that's the entire point of hiring experts, and it, as well as attorneys. Like, we hire experts all the time because I'm not a phone data expert. I'm a fucking lawyer. I hire experts to say, okay, I need you to look at this extraction. Tell me what's what. This is what the state's saying. It says, is there any way they could have fiddled with it? Is there any way that this wasn't actually on the device? You know, all those things. And then I'm also saying, okay, I also need you to help me question their experts. Now, yeah. we know here the state isn't going to be putting on any experts as to cause of death because they don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, right. don't forget, this is a nobody case. So, you know, they're going to be the only ones putting on any evidence that this is what happened. Now, does that mean that the state in its rebuttal case isn't going to put their own expert on to say, okay, they brought this thing about the COVID vaccine up and we're going to put on an expert to say that that's bullshit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's going to, like, how that's going to play out. It's going to be.
That's one of those things where people, they're going to believe what they're going to believe on that.
Right.
Expert, no expert. And that's a very visceral thing with a lot of people where they're going to be dug in. So, I mean, it's going to be very fascinating to see, you know, at the end of the day, is the jury, because in some cases like this, where you have some charges that are admitted to and some that are not, the jury may look at the end of the day and go, well, he's going to be away for some time no matter what because of this. So maybe we don't have to go as strong over on that because he's already getting punished over here. I wonder if that is part of the strategy at play here of, you know, best case scenario, you're in for however many years it is for lying to police and concealing hiding the body, but not the murder. And maybe we can get them to split the difference if we can play on the emotions of the COVID idea of you overreacting, as insane as it is, as insane as the response this is. We're going to paint you as, yeah, maybe you're not the brightest. Maybe you make bad decisions, but you're not a murderer.
Right.
And you can get the one guy to get sympathetic on the COVID shit, or woman, whoever it may be, or maybe a couple, because I mean, at this point in time, I think all of us know someone who's died of COVID. Mm-hmm. And I think all of us probably know someone who has been vaccinated and died at a younger age. Now, my point on that being, not that the COVID vaccine killed them, people fucking die. And in life, people do die at younger ages. It's correct. Usually just a few in each of our stories and our lives, but it does happen. But we always are looking for a reason and an explanation, and that happens to be one of the most convenient at this point in our history. So you get a jury of 12 people, your odds of finding some who knows or has had an experience like this that may be attributing that over there, getting sympathetic, you're right. It's not a crazy bridge too far.
I mean,
no case is a slam dunk. As much as this one seems like it could be, you just don't know.
You never know, because there is one absolute, unequivocal truth about jury trials, and it's that you never know
what
a jury is going to do. Yeah. They will come back sometimes and just surprise the fuck out of you. You know, you could be like, oh man. Feel as the attorney, like, we just crush that case, and you come back, there's no way they're going to find our guy guilty, and they come back guilty.
Yep.
Oh, it's like, you're like, what? So, and it goes both ways. So you just never know what a jury's going to do. And the fact that they found her COVID vaccination card plays right into it, because I think in terms of it being COVID itself wouldn't work, because they had a friend over on, you know, mm-hmm. New Year's Eve night, you know, he would be able to testify. Yeah, she didn't show any, so she wasn't sick. Mm-hmm. You know, but in terms of it being the vaccination itself, because there are plenty of people out there that believe that they brought that vaccination out way too fast. There was no testing done. You got athletes just dropping dead in the middle of soccer games and shit. You know, it's like, and people are like, it was a vaccination. It's a fucking COVID vaccine. All it takes is one, man. All it takes is one. And it's one of those things where if you can get over that hump, then the only other hump that you have to get over is, okay, you just got to accept the fact that my client's a moron.
Yes.
Like the dismembering the body thing, not the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But the thing that I just can't wait to see, is if he takes the stand and the state says, okay, So you're claiming that she was suddenly dead. Once we got you and we arrested you, why didn't you tell us where the fucking body was?
Right.
Because then we could prove up what you're saying.
Yeah.
Why didn't
we tell her?
Did we still, we still don't know where the fucking body
we
is.
We still don't know where the fucking body is.
No.
But like, they're going to ask him directly on cross-examination, why didn't you tell us where the body was? Because after 7 days, we're going to still be able to do an autopsy. And we know that you didn't dismember her chest. Did you pull all of her fucking organs out, Brian? You know what I'm saying? It's like, why didn't you tell us where the body was? Because that could have proven what you were saying is actually true.
Right.
And how does he answer that question?
Because what I'm saying is bullshit.
Right.
That's the correct answer, at least in my opinion it is.
There it is.
It's going to be fascinating to see where this goes in the next couple of weeks. We'll keep watching it. Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of Defense Diaries, and the other podcast out right now, Buried.
Inside the John Wayne Gacy Investigation.
There we go.
Yeah,
I forget the inside part.
Yeah,
Buried, no, inside good. The John Wayne Gacy Investigation. It is out now. Very fascinating. If you've been watching Devil in Disguise on Peacock, definitely, if you want to go deeper into this and really see what was going on there, way, way, way deeper, you got to check it out. And you also, on Defense Diaries, you just had Chernus on, didn't you?
Yeah, we just had Chernus on. So it was a great interview. He was fun. Sweet guy, you know, because I met him on our show when we did an interview of Patrick McManus. So if you guys haven't checked that out over here, make sure you check that out. Patrick McManus, the showrunner, and Chernus sat down with us, and we got to have a great conversation with those guys.
Check those out over on Defense Diaries. Great stuff. All right, Bob, thank you so much. Until next time, for Bob, Stacey, and Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once, a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores. You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores. Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.